Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's safety chat.
Hi, this is Nick Coya with the Portage County Safety Council. We just completed this week's Portage County Safety Council monthly meeting, and we have some bonus content for you with Al Abel. He was speaking about cranes and lifting devices, and we asked him to stay afterwards to give us an update and some additional information for your employees who may not have been able to attend. So, welcome, Al.
Thank you very much. Good to be here today.
Thank you so much. Al, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company that you work for?
Okay, I work for Mazzella Companies. Been in business, started in 1954. Company originally began as a wire rope shop, and over the years, we are now Mazzella Companies. We're certainly beyond wire rope now. We are building cranes, slings, below-the-hook lifting devices. We have field inspection teams, crane inspection teams, and many locations. I mean, Cleveland is the home base, but we're down in Tennessee, Alabama, Oklahoma, Florida. We're all over the place. So actually, it's pretty cool. When I first started with the company, we had about 60 people. I think we're about 650 people now. So it's pretty amazing in our company.
Wow. Yeah, that's a large company.
We're located right by the IX Center in Cleveland, and welcome people to give us a call, take a tour of our facility. Happy to do that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes this afternoon to talk to us after your presentation.
Sure.
Great presentation, by the way. Gained a lot of useful information. I always look forward to your safety talks at any of our council meetings or across the state that I see you do.
I appreciate that.
So let's talk a little bit about cranes and lifting devices and straps. When you go out to a facility and you come in, what would you classify as your top three safety issues related to that when you walk into a facility?
Yeah, as I probably walk in, you know, and by the way, whenever we're asked to do training at a company, before we do training, we're always going to do a site survey. So that site survey will always kind of do a walkthrough to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. The thing that bothers me the most is when I look at the condition of some slings and hardware they're using, or if I see eye bolts that are bent, or I see things that are there that have no rating on them, that's alarming right away. Because I'm about to do a training class with their people, and the first thing I'm going to do is talk about inspection of all rigging gear and hardware, and so we're already in trouble. So we have a discussion with the safety person then as to, when this comes up in class, how do we want to handle this? How do you want to handle this moving forward? You know, it's a new day in the world of rigging and lifting, so that's how we'd like to try to approach it. That's one I see. And then the other one is that seems sketchy a lot of times is the how they're handling crane inspection. Most people say, yeah, we're looking at them or we have a company come in. But, you know, it depends on how often that the duty cycle of the crane is important. How often is that crane being used? What problems are they having with it? And OSHA demands a monthly inspection. OSHA 19.10.176 says you got to do a monthly inspection of all cranes. Somebody. Now, and if they say, oh, we have our guy do it, well, that's fine if your guy has been trained to do the inspection to meet the industry standard. So that would be the one. And the other one that's alarming is I still see a lot of homemade lifting devices out there. Again, where you see that somebody made it, they've been using it for years, and there's no rating on it, there's no working load on it. That's probably the most common. Those are the three things that, you know, drive me nuts.
So to our listeners, just kind of think about that. Take a walk around your shop and look at when's the last time you inspected your cranes. Look at the condition of your lifting devices. And then also take a look at who's doing your training and your inspections to have a good understanding of it. So right. That's a good starting point for some of our members. And look for those homemade devices.
Absolutely.
That's a red flag.
Yeah. And you know, and the way they're storing stuff is critical. You know, I always give a compliment to a company if I see they have a board up or they have a rack up, and all things are neatly positioned. And, you know, so that just like, you know, I had three kids. I mean, you always try to get people to clean their room, you know, so to speak, right? Hang their stuff up, right? So nobody has to be perfect in this, but you shouldn't have slings just laying all over the place, certainly in tow motor aisles. Now, you better hang up something you're proud of.
Right.
You do not want to hang up something that is an OSHA violation. And the one, here's another one, you know, I'm going to sneak another one in on you that drives me crazy is that I'll look and I'll say, well, what about that? And I'll say, well, we don't use that. Okay, well, then why is it there? Because if you had an OSHA inspector come in, you know, you need to get rid of that. because my eyes went to it, their eyes would go to it. And if you had an incident, they would say, well, why are you, you know, and then you have to defend, well, we don't really use it. Or the other one here, well, we don't use it often. Well, if you say that, or we use it once a year, you know what, if you have that, you're using it.
Right. So those are some great things for people to look for in our companies that belong with the Safety Council. You know, another area of concern, and I'm hearing a lot about this right now, and not to get off into the construction side of things, but what's the difference between this competent, qualified, and certified operator?
Well, and I'll tell you what, here's what I get. I get a call sometimes from somebody at a company, and they'll go, hey, I need to have training, and I need to get all my people certified. Okay, well, really what's required right now, if you have an indoor crane, whether it's a jib, a gantry, a monorail, an overhead crane, that person, according to OSHA, has to be competent and qualified to do that lift. I don't have the verbatim definition of qualification, but bottom line is, a company like, you know, let's say the BWC is a company.
Okay.
The BWC, I'd have to be able to go to you and say, all right, you've got Mike over here running the crane. Have you provided training? Let me see the documentation to show that you provided him training. Now, what does that training look like? Could be a video. Maybe they went through the manual. And then also, did you have somebody in the shop working with them, on the job training, watching him before you let him have the controls to that crane? Now, you better document that you did all that. You can't just say, oh, yeah, we trained him. Okay, well, right. If you don't document it, you know that. You didn't do it.
If not documented, never happened.
It never happened. Now, and so OSHA requires competent and qualified to run the crane with documentation to show that your people have gone through that. Certification is a step up, and generally that is where it's a longer training process. The company still has to verify it, but they generally send their people out to get certified. And now you're talking a longer process, and testing is involved in that. As an example, we work with a company called ITI, Industrial Training International, and myself, like I'm a certified inspector of rigging gear and hardware. And the way the rules read for that is that every 3 years, I have to get recertified to be that inspector. And so what happens is I have to go through a 3-day class, and like, one, as an example, first day it's wire rope, second day your chain, then web, then below the hook. And each of those categories, I have to inspect numerous items, and I'm tested on that by a certified instructor. I must pass that test in order to be a certified inspector. And then in our world, you know, you're either level one, level two, level three, depending on how many years you've been doing and how many items you've been looking at.
Okay.
So certification ramps it up big time. And now in the mobile crane industry, certification is required. Indoor cranes, as of now, not.
Okay.
Competent and qualified.
Competent and qualified, but if we want to push to the next level, certification is a good way
to
go. So, you know, while we're talking about this, it leads us down that road of documentation. And this is a question I get often as I go out and walk facilities, is how often do we need to inspect our cranes and how much documentation is required, or what documentation?
Okay, and a crane, you know, here's what the rules are. Really, if you're the crane operator, let's go back to Mike, who's working in your tool room. When he uses that jib crane, the rule really says that he needs to be inspected. That crane needs to be inspected at the beginning of each shift.
Okay.
Now, that is a safe practice. That is not an OSHA requirement.
Okay.
Okay? And so that's the beginning of each shift. And a lot of companies do have a daily inspection form that they'll have people fill out. And that's fine, as long as people are not just pencil whipping that form, you know, that they're actually doing the inspection that is being required. Because a lot of people have forms, but the forms are meaningless, you know, if they're not really doing it. Now, OSHA does require documentation on a monthly basis. Now, that's a, you know, for the, some people always say a simple answer. Some people go, what's the difference between a monthly and an annual? I go, one page or three pages. And a lot of them depends on, because you're talking about more detail. A monthly could be done from the shop floor,
okay,
without getting up on a man lift and performing that monthly inspection. Now, if that crane is used a lot, the duty cycle's increased, a more aggressive inspection ought to be done. But a monthly inspection could be done. Now, who's doing that? Somebody better be trained to do that. If they say, well, we got our maintenance guy doing it. Well, that's fine. Okay. As long as your maintenance guy has been trained by, you know, Mazzella Service Department, another crane company, or he went through CM training, or he went through Harrington Hoist training. If he has gone through some training and you can prove it now, you know, that he's been trained, then he could do that monthly inspection.
So we should have some documentation of training for our monthly
that are doing that inspection. Okay. And again, a lot of times maintenance guys are very good. I mean, a lot of times they're the jack of all trades and they can handle it. The biggest problem I notice out there, I'll just tell you offhand, is that maintenance departments are shrinking. And so you have one guy, two guys, and he's got to keep all the pumps and the motors and all that stuff running. And then they'll say, well, by the way, have you done your crane? So a lot of times he'll look at me and go like, who's got time for that? You know, so, I mean, so, but, you know, as a company, you've got to make those decisions. Who's doing that? And obviously a company like us, we have trucks that leave our facility every day. And a lot of times we handle that whole thing for you. We'll do the monthly and the annual. And so then it's like, you know, you don't have to worry about that. It's like me with my air conditioning heating at home. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous, but bottom line is I'm not doing the annual on that thing. You know, I have it's part of the deal.
Right.
You know, I bought this thing a few years ago and I have whoever put it in, I have them come and service it. They know it the best. They service it and they tell me what's wrong. And then if the keypad tells me I need a new filter, okay, I can put a filter in. But I have the company that I'm trust kind of working on handling that for me. I don't want to have I'm not going to have my wife or myself doing that. So
kind of leaving it up to the experts, the people that really understand.
Absolutely.
That. Especially because it's a safety piece. Yes. You don't want someone to get hurt.
Yeah, you don't, you know.
You know, the other piece that I see problems with inspections and maybe some documentation is our chains and slings. What should we be doing inspection-wise and what documentation should I keep on those devices?
Well, the standard really is called out in the ASME B30.9, you know, for pretty much for all slings. But I will tell you, just a quick and dirty, chain slings are the most regulated of all slings. Chain slings absolutely must be inspected on an annual basis by a certified individual, right?
Okay.
And I will tell you, a pet peeve of mine, I go to companies sometimes and say, well, who's inspecting your chains? And they'll say, well, we got this crane company that comes in here and then they look at our chains. Okay. Is the crane company that's coming in looking at your cranes, then they also look to the side and then they look at your slings and go, hey, those are okay? Are they certified to do that? Okay, because you as a safety person must be able to prove that those chains have been certified by somebody every year.
So I should have some documentation behind each chain.
And I will tell you, like as a company, we have an electronic thing now. I mean, we could be in your building today, and then by tomorrow you have the electric. Maybe by the time our guys get back home, you already have the report because it's all done electronically and downloaded, and you have a copy of that in case you ever get audited. Now, web slings, same thing, but web slings are more disposable, and so a lot of times people don't worry about that as much. They have to be inspected, and they should be part of your annual process. Okay. But a lot of times those are easily repaired or tossed away.
Right, because there's less of a cost.
Yes, and by the way, people always go, well, how do you, there is a rule there is a way to properly dispose of slings. And we really would encourage people to check out if you go to our website, www.mozellacompanies.com, you can log on. And we have a whole blog and podcast dedicated to how to properly dispose of slings and what to look for on slings and cranes and so on. So we do have resource material out there for people, even if they don't buy, I hope you buy it from us, but even if you don't, we have a lot of information on the web. Check us out.
Perfect. Now to some of my fun questions, and I love these because these are things that you've talked about and I've seen too in the field that come up all the time. Things such as, if I had a guy, can he make me a lifting device? the guy that's in the shop.
People always have a guy. Well, can a guy, put something? I'll give you an example. There was a company I went to and they had, can a company assemble their own chain slings? Okay, let's just keep it simple with slings.
Okay.
And I said, you could. You actually could go to open up a Granger book or an MSC book and order all the pieces and parts and put a chain sling together. Whose name is going on that tag? You have to have a manufacturer's name on there. So in this case, it would be you. Okay.
Okay.
Your company name. So the BWC now would be on there. that you assembled that chain sling. And then you would have to show proof that you were trained by CM or Gunnabo or Campbell, that they trained you. Because if you are assembling a chain sling, you have to use all the right component pieces and parts. You don't want to be mixing and matching. And then your company name, BWC, goes on there with all the proper serial number, and everything else has to go on there. So once again, training would have to be critical. Now, if you say, I want to build a, you know, commonly I see guys with a spreader beam out there, and you know, that some guy made, you know, a while back. Is that okay? Once again, there are very specific, B30.26 standard for below the hook calls out, you have to have a company name on here, a manufacturer's name, a serial number. How much does that thing weigh? What's the design category, service category? It's all going to be on there. And if it's not on there, so could somebody else make it? You know, if a company has an engineering firm, here's what I hear a lot of times. Well, we have our own engineers. Great. Do you want to have your engineers working on making lifting devices? And like right now, you have them making things for the Navy and the Army. And now you're going to have them making spreader beams? Why are you doing that? You know, let the professionals make certain things. We specialize in below the hook lifting devices. Let us make it. Now, and I will tell you, in the old days, people would say, well, can we certify that for them? We cannot certify any lifting device you make. Okay. What we could do, though, we could take what you made. You'd have to pay for the reverse engineering of it.
Right.
And by the time you reverse engineer and load tech, you might as well buy a new one. I mean, in all honesty.
Right. So the short answer is I can't get my maintenance guy to go make me a special lifting device. I'm better off coming to a qualified company to do that, unless he is trained and taught in how to build those devices.
You're kind of a wild guy. So I have a feeling that, you know, you could be making stuff, you know, in your garage, you know, trying to bring it into the BWC to use. But no, we don't want you making your own stuff. I mean, come on, you know, like, and it is funny. I'll tell you one other little funny thing I see out there. Sometimes they'll hand me a hook that their guy made.
Okay.
And they'll say, well, make us one. So we make one now. And then ours comes in. And then the user of that hook now goes, oh, I don't like yours. Yours is heavier. You know, well, there is a design category that goes into this. So all of a sudden, this hook that Joe Smith made out of rod,
right?
You know, now we are making it. With a design category of 3 or 4 to 1, all right? So, which we have to make, 3 to 4 to 1. So now it's got that design category. Guess what? It could be heavier because the rod is going to be thicker in order to accommodate the weight that you require. So everything, in fact, sometimes I ask people, I say, well, okay, if you make it, what's the design category? Are you an engineer? Are you a PE? And if they can't answer all those things, then they shouldn't be making this stuff.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, a couple other little things that I see when we're going out there, I hear things such as I'm constantly replacing these latches on my lifting devices. Mm-hmm. Do we need to have them? Why do we have these latches? What is that telling you? And do we need to have this?
Yeah, there's no rigging class ever gets completed without somebody bringing up latches. You know, latches are like the bane of all lifting, you know. So, you know, bottom line, here's the rules. On all cranes, and an overhead crane, you have to have latches on all crane hooks. Absolute mandatory requirement. On slings, if the sling is designed with a hook that has a latch, it should be on there. Now, can a company remove the latches on a sling? They could, but they better document why they're doing that. Okay? Because there's hooks out there that don't have room for latches. You have foundry hooks and grab hooks. There's no latch, you know.
Right.
So you couldn't put it on there. Now, if somebody keeps going, oh, you know, we're busting latches all the time, okay? Well, something's not right. Because generally, they're jamming that hook on something. First of all, a latch is only a keeper. There should never be load on the latch.
Right.
So if somebody is damaging that latch, something's happening where load is appearing on that thing to bust that thing out all the time. And generally, if they're busting their latches, they're probably deforming their hooks. So it's a sign. If somebody says, man, we go through a lot of latches. I did have a customer call me the other day and ordered. He says, man, order me 50 latches because we go through them like crazy.
Wow. That's a lot of latches.
That's a lot of latches. So I'm thinking, what a waste of time. And what are you doing, you know, that's busting through that many latches? I mean, so, you know, I'd be like, you know, me buying a belt and, you know, my belt keeps busting on me all the time. Well, maybe it's me, right? You know, so.
All right. How about eye bolts? I see this issue too when I go out there and I hear sometimes I'm getting eye bolts that are bent, twisted. What's happening there? What's causing that? And what should we be doing about that?
Eye bolts are one of the most violated pieces of ring gear out there because eye bolts, first of all, eye bolts are very inexpensive. So companies like buying eye bolts because they're very inexpensive. You can buy them easy in a catalog. Eye bolt is a vertical lifting tool only. There are some companies that make eye bolts that you could sideload. Now, here's the other one that gets me. I say, well, that eye bolt can be used only for vertical lifting. And I say, they go, yeah, we know that. And so how many are you using on that beam? Two. Okay, well, if you got two, unless you're lifting with a vertical spreader beam with slings hanging straight down, you got angle on that thing. So if you have any angle, okay, that eye bolt is not being used properly. Plus, the other one is people do not secure the eye bolt into the load, which is another issue. They go like one turn, twist, and go. We always recommend whenever possible, they should be using hoist strings or swivels. It's a bigger expense, but you know what? It's the correct way to do things. And if they buy a hoist string or swivel that can handle a side load, they will not be busting eye bolts. The investment is well worth it. They will not have problems going down the road. But I would say anybody listening to this podcast, I hope somebody's listening out there for the time I'm sitting here doing this stuff. I hope somebody's listening out there. But if you look around your place and you see any bent eye bolts, or you see eye bolts with like about three or four washers on them, spacers, okay, they should not be using spacers because now they're violating. And once again, now they're securing it to the load, but really that's not the design of that eye bolt. It's supposed to be full thread engagement. Even on a swivel or a hoist string, it'll tell you that you should torque it to so many foot-pounds. You should have a torque wrench. You should be torquing it to that, whatever it says. You know, yeah. So follow the rules in order to do things properly.
I would say 90% of shops I walk through that work with molds of some sort are putting 2 to 3 eye bolts in that, and they have the angle chains, and they're not doing that vertical lift like they should. And it's a concern.
And the worst of all, if they're using eye bolts from China, they're running over to a hardware store, getting a bunch of eye bolts, sticking them in there. Now, I will tell you, on eye bolts, we say that anything that anybody uses for rigging and lifting must have a working load on it, must have a serial number. Eye bolts kind of fall into that one little category where you will not see a working load on an eye bolt, okay? Eye bolts do not want to have that mandatory. There's a bazillion eye bolts out there, and you'd be throwing a lot of eye bolts away. But does that mean you don't have to worry about it? No. What it means is if you use eye bolts, as an example, if you're buying them from Fastenal and you have drawers of eye bolts and you're using those, that's fine. But you need to ask Fastenal or you need to ask a company for an eye bolt chart. If you're buying Chicago eye bolts, you ought to have a Chicago chart up there that your people are using as a reference so they know exactly in a vertical lift how much that eye bolt can lift. So there's no, you know, you can't say, oh, you know, we just don't have it or it's not on there. No, excuses, that is not correct. You must know. A rigger, as we just had everybody in this group here, everybody's a rigger. You got to know the rules. You know the rules. You can't just go, I didn't know. Yes, you do know, especially if you're listening to this now. You know better.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking some time to speak with us today. This information was great. I look forward to future presentations you put together. Thank you for taking time out. And everyone out there, be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.